G'day, and welcome to the Fasting Highway podcast, the podcast that's all about intermittent fasting. I'm your host, Graham Curry from Perth, Australia. I lost 60 kilograms or 132 pounds living an intermittent fasting lifestyle and have successfully maintained that weight loss. I'm also the author of the Amazon category best-selling book, The Fasting Highway, which will give you a great insight into what it's actually like to live it day to day, how to get started, what it's about, what are some of the health benefits that come from it, and how to turn it into a successful long-term lifestyle. In this series of podcasts, you'll be hearing from people from all over the world, from the beginners to the experienced and those that are on the journey. You'll also be hearing from some leaders in the intermittent fasting community, and you'll also be hearing from some past guests as we recheck in to see how they've been going. And thank you for joining us here on the Fasting Highway. Enjoy the show. Hey everyone, thanks to those that have been booking in with me for the private one-on-one coaching. It's been very uplifting and it's been so great to help so many people in such a short space of time. If you do want to get some one-on-one coaching and some advice from me, you're just struggling a bit, or you might want to get going, or you might have a few issues in maintenance, come and have a chat to me. You can do that in private by going to the website www.thefastinghighway.com, click on coaching, get help, and book a time with me. All times you see will be in your local time zone and a relevant charge is there. That's www.thefastinghighway.com to book in for the private one-on-one coaching with me. Okay, folks, let's get on with today's podcast. G'day, and welcome to the Fasting Highway podcast. And this is episode 162. And just before we get started today, I just wanted to give a huge thank you to the feedback and all the well wishes about the launching of my private coaching and mentoring service. It's been really thrilling and it's been a great week and I've really enjoyed talking to people and helping them get going with their intermittent fasting or overcoming some struggles that they may have or just answering those burning questions and giving them some accountability. If you'd like to do that with me in a private session one-on-one, you can do that by going to the Fasting Highway website. That's thefastinghighway.com. Follow the prompts on Get Help and Coaching, and you can book a date and time with me there. All the times you see are in your local time zone right around the world. Okay, folks, let's get on with today's podcast, and I'm going to be speaking with Kerry Lurch. And Kerry is a 43-year-old registered nurse, professional dancer, mango farmer, and mother of two girls aged 12 and 14. And she resides in a small town called Kununurra on Mirrawong Country in the remote East Kimberley of Western Australia. And Kerry was the chubby baby who turned into the chubby toddler, becoming the obese child who transitioned into the desperately dieting teenager and adult. And she's had a few trials and tribulations along the way with her weight, as you'll hear about in the podcast today. But Kerry is a very inspiring person, and her podcast is certainly going to do that for people all around the world. So here she is to tell her story, Kerry Lurch. Oh, g'day, Kerry, and welcome to the Fasting Highway, and thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Graham, and thank you very much for talking to me, and also thank you for all that you do in the fasting community and with the Fasting Highway.
Oh, thank you, and the pleasure is all mine, and you're a very inspiring member of our Facebook community, the Fasting Highway, so we thank you for that, Kerry, and you're talking to us there from all the way in Kununurra, top end of Western Australia there. Kerry is a mango farmer, as you heard, and a nurse, and she's a jack of all trades. But Kerry, for those people around the world that are listening to the podcast and don't know of you, if you wouldn't mind just sharing a bit of your backstory, you know, sort of problems you had with weight in your life and that sort of thing, and finding your pathway to where you got to intermittent fasting.
So I was the pretty chubby, predominantly bottle fed baby who went on to be an even chubbier toddler, who went on to be an obese child, and then a forever dieting and overweight and obese teenager and adult. So, you know, I was active and I was not unhealthy in the sense that I had no ailments, but I was obese as a child. So by the time I was 12 years old, I was well over 96 kilos. Which is, I don't know, that'd be over 200 pounds, I imagine. So going into high school, I was a very, I was an obese child. So I started my first diet at 13, and that was good old Weight Watchers, and that was in the 90s or the late 80s, early 90s. So that was the high carb, low fat revolution. So I spent 18 months with massive calorie restriction, and I was hungry for that whole 18 months. And I just, I slogged it out, and I managed to get my weight down to maybe mid-70s after 18 months of really, really working hard. So I was exercising hard. I was eating just about nothing. I was always hungry. I was always miserable. And then, so I went into upper high school, you know, academic pressures increased and social pressures increased and a few bad habits started to creep back in. So, you know, that 18 months of sweat and tears kind of, you know, all started to become undone. And to start off with, I was still doing everything like I was, and it didn't matter that I was eating nothing, and it didn't matter that I was exercising constantly. My weight was still going up. And so then you kind of become completely disheartened, and away it goes. So by the time I went to university, my weight was back up to over 90 kilos. And then I didn't have the safeguard of, like, you know, a school cafeteria with healthy options and mum and dad cooking healthy meals. I was out on my own, you know, with all of this junk food around me, and I'd never really eaten lots of junk food before. So then I had that on top of, you know, even though I was overweight, I was eating lots of food, but it was all good food. Well, good food, but, you know, high carb and typical 90s low fat, high carb. So not that good, but what we thought was good food, but lots of it. And so I started to exercise lots. I joined the gym, I started running, and I desperately tried to outrun my fork. And so at 19, I got my weight from 80 to down to about 80, 85 kilos. So by the time I was in my second or third year of uni, my weight was in the overweight range. So I'd come down out of the obese range, and I was in the overweight range. So I managed to, you know, keep my weight within this range for about 10 years or so. And then I got pregnant with my first child, and my weight ballooned to over 110 kilos. So by the time I had my first child, I'd reached 110 kilos. My liver was in a terrible state. I was covered from my neck down to my toes in this little liver spots. And they started when I went into labor, and they were still there 6 months later until I got my weight down under 90 kilos. So after my first child, I decided that I actually really needed to take charge of my health, as much as my weight, but my health and well-being for my child. So I started a low-carb, moderate protein, kind of no refined foods diet. It's an Australian, it was Body Trim System, it was all the go and all the rage. And so I thought, right, I'm going to do this. And it was incredibly restrictive. I found it super restrictive, but I was determined. So I did that for a good 10 years. In between, I had another child, and I loosened off a bit through that. But then I managed to get my weight down to about 70, between 72 to 75 kilos, which I think is about, I don't know, 165 pounds or somewhere around that yep. range. So I was able to keep my weight at that kind of weight range, but it was really hard work, and it was restrictive, and it felt like a constant effort, and I was having to exercise still to maintain my weight, like reasonable amounts. I couldn't exercise as much as I did before I had a child, so I didn't have that crutch to lean on where I could I could run for an hour because I just didn't have that hour. So it became more obvious that I actually had to work on my diet and my nutrition. So my weight, you know, with all of this, it felt incredibly restrictive. And so I nutted on and I knuckled down and I kept going. And then my oldest, like, by the time I hit 40, I was in this increasing downward spiral of ill health and well-being. So my weight, it was getting harder and harder to maintain my weight in the healthy weight range. I was just sitting on the edge of the healthy weight range and the overweight range, but it became harder and harder to maintain my weight there. And I just had these increasing number of health ailments. So I had horrific carpal tunnel that was at the point of needing surgery. I was getting arthritis in my joints and especially in my little fingers. And I was having increased sleep issues. I had this dermatitis all around my mouth, this perioral dermatitis, which I'd had off and on for 20 years. But it was becoming more and more pronounced and more severe. And I have miasma or chloasma, which is like a hyperpigmentation of the skin. And again, I've had that since I was 20, but it was becoming more and more and more pronounced. And I was getting dark spots and all of these skin issues. I was having, you know, my gums were receding. It was just this whole lot of, which, you know, a lot of people could put down to, oh, I'm just becoming middle-aged and getting old. But I was like, no, this is not right. I feel like I'm trying to do everything I can to nourish my body and keep my body healthy, and yet it's still falling apart on me. So one of your Fasting Highway members, Yang Zhan Barnes, she had started fasting a few months earlier, and she'd had great results with it. And I'd dabbled with fasting maybe in 2015 when the Michael Mosley book 5-2 came out, but I felt like my throat had been cut. Like I couldn't go a whole day without food or just with 500. Like I just couldn't go straight into that. So another thing that you put down, I feel like a failure. I can't fast. Anyway, I thought, no, I need to give this a go. So she talked about it. I got Jin's book. I bought your book and I started reading, and that was it. I've kept reading ever since and finding out about it. And that was probably, I'm terrible with keeping track of dates and stuff like that, but I think it was about 2021, I think it was in the middle of COVID, or maybe just before COVID hit up here. No, it must have been 2020. Terrible, but that's because it's just become my life now. So I've stopped even thinking about when I started and when it happened. And so the first 3 months were pretty hard going. Like I felt, you know, I'd worked hard, I had this restrictive diet, and I was still keeping this restrictive diet, and I was fasting, and I was struggling to get to 16 hours, and I felt like I'd been hit by a Mack truck. I wasn't seeing any weight loss, I wasn't seeing any difference in measurements. And I think without the support of the online groups and without these support groups, there's no way I would have kept going. But I would ask the question, I'm really not losing weight, what's going on? And people would say, trust the process, keep going, your body's got healing to do. And sure enough, before the scales started moving, which took three months plus, my ailments started to improve. So, you know, even though I didn't get that energy burst straight away, my carpal tunnel improved, the arthritis in my little finger improved, the dermatitis improved, and then the scales started going down, and then everything fell into place, and everything just, a switch flicked, and that's it. It was fantastic. And So that was pretty much my journey from, you know, a life of being overweight and obese to finding IF and then and using it as a tool, not only to lose weight but to heal. Like, that's been my biggest takeaway from it.
Yeah, fantastic. Great backstory, and typical of a lot of us that have had struggles with weight our entire life from the time we were born. And you know, it can be a struggle, and I'm really glad to hear that you persevered in that first 3 months, because a lot of times intermittent fasting isn't easy for everybody. And sometimes we have struggles, no matter what phase you're at. That could be at the beginning stage, halfway through. You might be in maintenance for 2 years and all of a sudden you start struggling. So it's important to work through those things, and don't sit there and sort of get confused and struggle and that sort of thing, and ask questions like Kerry said. Or if you need some extra help and you prefer the one-on-one stuff, then go to my website, thefastinghighway.com. You can book in and have a chat with me in private and we can work through these things. But don't sit there in silence and struggling, because that's the worst thing that you can do. But Kerry, when you go back to it, when you first started, did you get that message after reading the books and that sort of thing? So you started off clean fasting, because people always want to know that.
I did, yes. I was very fortunate in that I so when I'd actually been fasting, not fasting, but I'd actually been trying to hold off breakfast or a first meal to a little bit later in the day before I'd even looked into fasting or spoken to Jeanne. So I was, and that wasn't, I don't know why I was doing that. I just felt like if I started later, I would eat less in the day. So I was trying to do that, but then I would have a little handful of nuts before I went out to the, to do an hour or two worth of work on the farm. So my thing was, I was a grazer. I've always been a grazer. I'm busy. I don't have time to stop. I often didn't eat a meal, but I would graze. So I would grab things and I would be eating just whenever I had a chance. So just this constant eating. But when I spoke to Jeanne, I was lucky enough, I purchased Jin's Fast Feast Repeat and the Fasting Highway. And so straight away I had the information there about clean fasting. So I did start clean fasting straight away. And I'm very glad I did, because I really don't think I would have been able to hang on those first 3 months if I hadn't clean fasted, because I know that I have occasionally accidentally broken a fast, like, you know, had a soda water from the pub or something and they've put lime in it. And I've taken the lime out, but they've squeezed the juice in and I've gone, oh, well, it's not much, I'll drink it. And I know how hard it is once I have that to keep fasting. It makes it so much more challenging. So I was very grateful about the clean fasting message that I got straight away. So yes, I've been clean fasting from day one.
Yeah, that's great. I think all fasters have done that, Kerry. You sort of, you know, done that while you're fasting. Something's happened. Your mind goes off. And I remember having a drink at a set of lights once. So I bought this drink and I got in my car and I drove along and I thought it was soda water, just plain soda water. And I looked at it and it was actually tonic water. And I started the traffic lights with my head out the window, spinning this tonic water around. Everyone's looking at me like I was crazy or something. And I was thinking, oh my God, I've broken my fast.
No.
And, you know, another time I was sitting at a cafe and a guy came over and put the sparkling water down. And I was busy on the phone talking to somebody and I took a big swig out of it. Although that tastes weird. Then I realized that it had a big hunk of lemon in it. And yeah, so we all make mistakes like that. But yeah, that's all part of the journey, isn't it? But tell us about your protocol, Kerry, when you first started that first 3 months. What was your fasting protocol and why did you sort of choose that?
So to start off with, because I didn't have massive amounts of weight to lose, I still wanted to lose a bit of weight and feel a bit lighter and healthier, but I didn't. That wasn't my sole motivation. I just wanted to get 16 hours. I was like, right, if I can do 16 hours, I might get a little bit of autophagy, I might get a bit of healing, so I just want to get to 16 hours. So I did 16.8 for probably 2 months, 2.5 months, and then after that 2.5 months, it just kind of organically became easier to do 18.6. And then once I got to 18.6 for a month or so, 20 hours wasn't a problem. And then before I knew it, I could fast up to 23 hours and it wasn't really an issue. So it just, I resigned myself to trusting the process, and I just went with it, and I had no specific protocol in mind. I was like, I just want to get to 16.8 and then we'll see where this journey goes. And so the first 2 months was 16.8, and then a couple of months at 18.6, and then a month or so at between 20 and 22.2, and now it's anywhere between 16.8 and 21.3. I have done a couple of longer fasts, like say 27, 28 hours, but it's really not my cup of tea. I find if I go over 24 hours, I find it a lot harder to not make healthy choices, but I'm physiologically hungry after 24 hours. So I think I would have to work up to anything longer, because then I find that my food choices aren't amazing after 24 hours. It's,
So, whatever you can. And obviously, you're a very busy person, Kerry, and, you know, we heard you're a nurse and you're a mango farmer as well, and mango farming, very physical job, hard labour. You know, the heat up there is very, very hot where you live, and working in those conditions and fasted. Just let's talk about that for a minute, and the struggles of maybe being a nurse, doing sort of shift work and also working on the farm. How did you find that while during your fast? Because a lot of people often ask me, how do you do this when you do shift work? Did you do shift work, or were you doing set shifts?
Yes, so I was doing set shifts, and I'm very lucky to only work two, three shifts a week at the actual hospital. This was the hardest thing for me. When I was picking mangoes, fasting makes those laborious jobs so much easier. Like I used to dread mango season. It's so hot. I would go out there. I would have to stop a couple of hours in and have something to eat and something to drink. And if I didn't have something to eat, I would get heat stroke, which sounds crazy because you think you need water. But actually, I needed the food to make sure my body was getting the electrolytes. And if I didn't have that, I would go down like a sack of spuds and I would be quite unwell. So, you know, I had to stop every 2 or 3 hours and replenish my food and have a drink, and then I could go back out. And it was always, you'd come in because it's only a short season, but it's a couple of months. And for those couple of months, I was just outright exhausted, like absolutely flat out exhausted. Now mango season comes, it's really not a problem. Like I get up at 4:30, I'm out there. I don't even think about food until maybe 11 o'clock. I'll go, I'll have something to eat, and then I come back in and I spend the rest of the afternoon packing in the shed, and then I come in and do whatever else needs to do. I get to, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock at night, I think I'm ready for bed, but I'm not exhausted, and I've kept going that whole time without even thinking about it. So it's a godsend for me for the mango picking, because, you know, sometimes I'm out there in 45 degree heat with 90% humidity, and that's hard going just in itself. And to have that not worry me is probably one of the biggest non-scale victories I've had out of fasting.
Yeah.
But I have to say the shift work is a different matter. Because it's a high-stress situation, I work theatre, which isn't too bad. So I work in the operating theatre. But for a long time I did work emergency, and I still occasionally go down there and help. But the challenge is, you don't get time to eat on shift. And so it's probably better if you're going to be a shift worker to eat when you've finished. But because it's such a high-stress environment, and I have such massive amounts of cortisol pumping through me because it's a flight-or-fight situation a lot of the times. Not all shifts, not every shift, but a lot of the time there's high-stress things going on. And so fasting on top of that high stress is just too much stress for my body. So when I go to work, I have a longer eating window, and I don't worry that I'll have a snack now, and if I have another snack in half an hour, it doesn't matter. I give myself grace, because it's better that I just go with the flow on those days than I say no. And some people do it very well. Like I do have friends in the health system that do fast, and they have their black coffee. My thing is I can't have black coffee. That sets my stress levels and my cortisol levels really high too. So that's the thing I love about IF, is that it's not preaching a diet. It's preaching a study of one. And so that to me is the ultimate in health and well-being, because I think in the Western medical system, it's very much a one-size-fits-all, and very much you go to the doctors, and until your numbers are wrong or until you're out of appropriate levels, like, you know, they're not going to, you know, come back when you're diabetic, come back when you're pre-diabetic. Until then, just carry on. So, I mean, I think that this IF giving us the freedom to see what works for us, and fasting while working in that high stress situation doesn't work for me, and I don't feel guilty about that, and I don't try not to do it and just push through and fast because it doesn't work for me. But at the same time, when I go home, I'm like, oh, no, I can fast for longer because I can work my day around me more on the farm and stuff. So that, to me, is such a great thing about IF, is that ability to tweak it to what works for you and not to preach. So, you know, no one preaches that I should be vegan, carnivore, omnivore, anything. It's like you go away and you try and you do what works for you, because we're all put together so very differently, and personalized healthcare and individualized tailored programs for health and wellness are so important, but they're so overlooked and just not accepted in Western medicine. So I think it's my hope is for IF to make its way into mainstream healthcare and to become a massive a massive tool for people to use in their health and wellness.
Yeah, I certainly think the worm is turning in that respect. I mean, as you probably read, I'm sort of working with the University of Western Australia at the moment, and we're putting together a study about using intermittent fasting as an obesity control, and talking to the various stakeholders and interviewing people that do IF. And we have a young PhD student who's doing that, and he's also interviewing stakeholders. And the idea is that once we gather all the information and we put all the data together, we can submit a paper to the Australian Medical Journal. So hopefully that will get picked up in the next year or two. We'll see how it goes. But at least we're talking about it. And I know from talking to people within the hospital system, obesity clinics, that type of thing, that there is a real shift and a real mindset shift towards how fasting can help obese people. It's not as intrusive, obviously, as you would know, as weight loss surgery and that sort of thing. And I would urge anybody that is considering weight loss surgery to go and have a discussion with your doctor and maybe consider intermittent fasting first, because it's a lot less intrusive and you may have a lot less problems, as we've heard from people that have had weight loss surgery on this podcast, and they've all said that if they had known about the benefits of intermittent fasting, they probably wouldn't have done that. But let's just switch back to when you first started, Kerry, and I know people are sitting there wondering, that first 3 months when you didn't have much of a result and you persevered, what was your eating window look like? Were you a person that was delaying anything, or were you pretty much eating anything you crave? And how does that style sort of, has that changed now?
Yeah, very much. So when I started, I was still having that quite restrictive low-carb, moderate protein diet. And so that's probably where I can't understand why I'm not losing weight, because I'm still being restrictive. I'm still, you know, eating well, and now I'm fasting on top of it, and I'm still not losing weight. But I think that my body had so much healing to do that it had more important things than weight loss going on. So once the weight started coming off and I realized that this was a sustainable way of life, I kind of relaxed into it. Once it became easier to fast longer and longer, I relaxed into it, And I started really listening to my body, and appetite correction kicked in. Admittedly, I am someone who can eat a lot. Appetite correction can only go so far for someone like me. It's funny, like, sorry, this is a very side topic, but I had my DNA tested last year because my husband was, he became gravely ill, and he's much better now, thank goodness. But as a, we kind of went and had our DNA tested, and it came back with nothing that I didn't know. But it was so funny because the doctor was reading it out to me, and she said, oh, yes, your genotype is very sensitive to stress and no sleep and too much salt and too much fat and too much everything. And basically, your genotype finds it incredibly hard to lose weight and keep weight off and very easy to put weight on. I thought, there's nothing that I don't, nothing that I don't know. So, yeah, now I've lost my train of thought of where I was going with
that. Yeah, the problem with those tests, of course, Kerry, is that they don't often tell us the full picture, and those sorts of doctors are very good at telling us what we already know. And it's like when I used to go to the doctor, and you were probably the same when you had weight problems as a younger person and as you were growing up, and they'd always say, oh, you know, you just got to eat less, move more and all that, you know, that's, and you'd say, okay, well, what's the plan? Oh, no, that's the plan. So they never had a plan. They never told you what to do afterwards or how long to do it for or anything. And I think that's what is great about intermittent fasting. But those tests that you had, the DNA tests, I'm really glad your husband's good too, and my regards to him, and I'm glad that he's well again. But, you know, sort of, when was the convincement for you? When you started intermittent fasting, you've done all these things before. When did you actually think to yourself, even though you had that slow 3-month start, when did you think to yourself, there's something in this, there's really something in this?
So even in that 3 months when I wasn't losing weight, but I would wake up and the swelling in my little fingers had gone down. The deformity in my little fingers had gone down. My carpal tunnel was moving better. My face, my skin looked clearer. Like, just those things, I was like, wow, there really is something in this. And, yeah, I was a little bit disappointed that the weight wasn't just falling off. Like, you know, because you, especially when you hear other people's stories and they're like, oh, my gosh, I lost all this in this amount of time and it just fell off and rah, 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 and this is fantastic. I was like, no. But, again, like I say, I think it was all that healing that my body had to do. And so when I first started, I was having this quite restrictive diet. And then appetite correction kicked in, and that was great. So I started eating, you know, to what my body really wanted and needed. And then I'd always eaten reasonably healthy, but I certainly had that desire and that drive to find foods that served me well, in your words. So I wasn't going to waste my eating window on something crap. Like, I wasn't going to waste it on processed food. I wasn't going to waste it on something that wasn't satisfying. So there was that real, I think that, and that just keeps tweaking and becoming more and more, like every day, every week, you know, and things change. My body craves different things at different times, but it's just honoring that and listening to that and going with that. And so I've started introducing a lot more starchy or whole complex carbohydrates into my diet, because for 10 years my diet was so restricted and I had no carbohydrates. Now, that really affected my microbiome. So by the time, like, my microbiome was decimated after 10 years of that, which meant that my gallbladder struggled and, you know, I was getting other issues too. And so I've introduced a more, what I think is a, for me, what, which may be completely different to someone else, but for me, I've introduced foods and a diet that is really well-rounded and working really well for me. And so some of them may put my weight up a tiny bit, not significantly, but, you know, my weight, I got my weight down to probably 66 kilos, but then I had this realization, I have health, I'm lean, but I don't necessarily have wellness. So I think IF gives you the grace to have time to be free of restrictions, like of those massive food restrictions. So I had a lot of work to do with my relationship with food. You know, forever I'd been overweight, and it's like, well, if you eat more of this and less of this and some of this and do that. So I was forever looking at hacks to try and keep my weight, you know, reasonable. And then all of a sudden I had this freedom of, no, you listen to your body and you eat what makes it feel really good. And so that's what I do, and I'm really, really grateful for it.
Yeah, you've seen the benefits of that. And I always say I like to eat what makes me feel my greatest. And for me, it's all about complementing that clean fasting period. I mean, as you said, if you're going to go to the bother of clean fasting for 16, 18, 20 hours, 36 hours, whatever you do, and then it comes to your eating window, it's about complementing that. And so you put the two together after a while and you start moving towards that worthy window food that we talk about. Because what happens with intermittent fasting, you may be a person that starts off eating all the things, you never change your diet or anything like that. But all of a sudden, over a period of time, and as you said, you come to your eating window, you know what, I want to make this really worthy. I want to make this really good. And then when you might not have something that's worthy, it's like when we go to a restaurant or we go to an event and you go, oh, man, that was terrible. Feel like you missed out on your worthy window. So for me, that's what it's about, complementing that clean fast. But with food choices, for me, it's vigilance without obsession, right?
Oh, very much so. And that's where IF is such a great thing. And, you know, if you have something that doesn't serve you that well, it's going to mean the next day is much harder. So, you know, usually your fast the next day suddenly becomes an issue where it's never not an issue if you nourish your body well, which, you know, we can all get through. It's not a problem.
Yeah.
But it's just that self-awareness. And I heard a wellness coach talking the other day, and they were talking about we've all got a bag of shoulds, and we should do this and we should do that and we should do the next thing, and most of us aren't doing any of our shoulds. But she used the example of someone saying, you know, she used to like running, and she said someone said to her, oh, I should start running again. And she said, why? Were you a good runner? Did you enjoy it? And they said, oh, no, I hated it, but it's good for me, so I should do it. And she was like, well, why would you go running when there's so many other options for physical activity? And it's the same with food. Why would you eat something that doesn't serve you or that you don't like when you could, there's so many other options, you could do something that you really enjoy that serves you well? Like, you know, so it's that experimenting and working out, you know, and that means that you're taking the time. So you're taking the time and effort to invest in your body and listen to your body. And that in itself is a huge thing.
I think so. You know, for me, it's, as you know, I was a sugar and fast food addict. So I worked out that those two things had to get out of my life. Otherwise, I was either going to be dead or I was just going to continually piling on the weight. And I was getting to a stage where I almost felt like I was going to explode. I was going to bed every night. I wasn't sleeping well. I wasn't restful. I was getting up 3-4 times in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom, and usually a detour to the kitchen to eat something out of the fridge in the middle of the night. All those sorts of things. And what fasting's given me, and I always talk about the inner peace that we get from it. And in that fasting period for me is that very peaceful, very quiet time. You just work through your day, you're fasting. And then when it comes to your eating window, and I've talked about this many times, it's like a theatrical experience for me. It's like going to the theater, and you start off with act one. Act one's your opener, and then you'll have that. And I always say to people that get that real binging, want to rip open the fridge and just continually eat, we'll start your opener with something higher in fat, maybe some avocado, cheese, something like that, and then take a bit of a pause. Just sit back and relax and reflect, and then move on to the next act of your sort of meal, if you like. And then it's working towards that eating till we're satisfied, not stuffed feeling, isn't it? And you mentioned there that that's still a work in progress for you. And
yes, very much. And it probably will be for a while. So I don't know that I will ever get to that point where I feel happily satisfied. So I never get to that point where I sigh. Like, I can always probably fit a bit more, but I don't need to. I'm actually okay. Like, and so I stop when I'm not hungry or when I've eaten this much, because I know that that is plenty. That will get me through. I'm done.
Yeah.
And it just simplifies it until like, you know, who knows? I hold out hope. Maybe one day I will get to that point where I take that big sigh and go, oh, I'm done. But it's really a very minor thing. Like it's,
yeah, you know, it's a time thing. It really is.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It took me a long time to get to that point. I was the same as you. You know, you like you think, okay, do I feel full or am I full? I don't know. Maybe I'm still hungry. You look at the clock, there's some more time to go in your window. And that's the real mindset thing when I work with people. I always say to them, don't keep eating because there's another half hour or an hour left in your window. You know, if you're full and satisfied and you feel great, then just stop there. It doesn't matter how long's left to go in your window. It might be you've got another 2 hours. Just stop where you are, regroup, and then do the same thing the next day. But I mean, your journey mirrors a lot of people out there. They start off, they have a few struggles, and all of a sudden they click into it. So with the weight loss, Kerry, I know people are sitting there thinking about this, like from when you first started back in 2020, 2021 there, to now, sort of how many kilos and pounds have you lost since then?
My weight probably got up to about 76, 77 kilos. And I'm probably sitting about 68 now. I did get down to 66, but then which I may do again, which was a very, like I was, that I wouldn't want to lose any more than that. But yeah. I'm very happy. I'm very happy at 68. But this is this process of trying to heal my microbiome and add more foods that aren't necessarily, like, you know, if I want to stay at 66, I have to be quite restrictive and I have to be hungry more than I'd like. So,
yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, your body gets to a set point where you're happy. And I have a lot of people say to me, oh, Graham, I want to get this last 5 pounds off. And I say, how much weight have you lost? They say, I've lost 50 or 100 pounds. And I say, well, you know, maybe your body doesn't want to get any more weight off. I know when I got to 100 kilos or 220 pounds, I'm a 6'5" guy. And that's pretty lean.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, I don't want to get down to the 90s or something like that because I'm going to start looking too lean. I wasn't happy. I could feel my body struggling and rebelling against it. And I found this really beautiful sort of vibe between about 102 to 106. So I range about 4 to 6 pounds. That's how I keep my, I call it a goal range or vigilance without obsession. I don't really call it maintenance now. But for me, fasting, as I've gone longer and longer, has become more intuitive as you become more in tune with your body. And my fasting protocol, 2 days may never be the same now. It might be 16 and 8 one day. It might be 18 and 6 the next. But generally, it's averaging about 20 to 22 hours during the week. And then on the weekends, I extend that out. I go out for lunch with my wife. We have sort of 2 meals a day or a light snack in the evening. So have you found that you're becoming more in tune with your hunger signals in your body and learning that, you know, it's okay to sort of open at different times and eat at different times?
Very much so, very much so. And also the, you know, like if something goes on and I have a massive day or I get called in the middle of the night or, you know, all of those things because I do a lot of on-call at the hospital, so sometimes I can be at work in the middle of the night just on a call-out. And I get back and the next day I'm hungry. If I'm hungry, it's not like, no, I have to make it to this many hours before I open. Now I'm like, I'm actually quite hungry and I feel like I want to eat. It's not a problem if I eat. And so I find that better than trying to drag it out until the set amount of hours that I want it to be at. Because if I'm listening to my body and honoring my body, which, you know, my fasting muscle is strong now, so it's not, I'm not scared of it. Like I go, no, I'm going to eat now and maybe I close a bit earlier and have a longer fast tomorrow, or, you know, it is what it is and it'll be what it'll be. And as long as I'm clean fasting, eating nutritious food and moving, then life is good.
Yeah. And it's, to note as well, people should go back to the show notes and see that Kerry got up to a high weight actually of over 100 kilos or 220 pounds at one stage in her life. And now she's back down in that sort of mid 70 kilos range or up around the 160 pounds and living life large and enjoying it. And I mean, you know, to lose 20 pounds in a sort of short space of time, really, between that time and now, I mean, on your body frame is fantastic. And I know, Kerry, as we read about, you're a professional dancer as well. Yes. And let's tell us about that and how this has enhanced that side of your life and just what that's all about.
So there's a lot of ways that it's really enhanced everything. So firstly, I have the energy. So before, I don't do as many now, but I'm starting to get back into it. But I teach workshops. I teach classes every week, and that's not a problem. But I go away and teach workshops at festivals and perform at festivals. And often these festivals are like, you know, 4 or 5 days long. And there's 8 or 9 hours of dancing workshops through the day, whether I'm giving one or taking one, or and then performances at night. Now, it used to be this, like, I would get to the end of those 4 days and I would feel like I'd hit a brick wall because my body was absolutely exhausted because I had pushed it to the absolute limit. And, you know, like through the day trying to find times to eat and, oh, I have to eat, but then I have to perform, but I don't want to perform on a full belly, so I have to eat when I get off, but then it's going to be 11 o'clock at night. Like, you know, just this whole thing. IF has taken out all of that out of the equation, and it's also left me with so much energy. So I can do workshops all day, teach workshops, take workshops, perform, and I still have energy left to spare, and it's amazing. And another thing that it does for my dancing is that because I'm only eating once a day, I still prepare meals for my family, but I'm a bit more savvy about it. So, you know, we have leftovers. I'll cook something and they can have leftovers. But because I'm not spending that same amount of time with food preparation and with sitting down to eat, I have more time to allow myself to be creative, and I don't have to give it a bit longer because my belly's full till I get up and start nutting something out. So I've got like this creativity on tap whenever I choose to tune into it, which is an amazing thing, which I really, really enjoy. And I'm sharp and focused. Like, you know, it used to be I'd go to workshops or I'd be teaching workshops, and after a meal, I would just be flat out trying to stay awake. And now it's, you know, whether I've eaten or not, I'm still, you know, sharp and clear, and it's not a problem.
How good is that? And your genre is belly dancing, yeah? Is that what you're
doing? Yes. Yeah, Middle Eastern dancing. Yep. So there's a lot of body exposed. So another thing is my self-confidence, because I've always got out there and done it no matter what size I am, because it is the type of dance that is very, it embraces whatever size you are. It's not a size kind of matters thing. But I am so much stronger in my moves. I'm so much more in tune with my body, and I trust my body more, and I actually feel that it's fitter and it moves better than it did 20 years ago, and I don't have all that excess fluff holding me back or holding me down. So it's certainly nice to get out there and not be thinking, oh my gosh, is my costume giving me a muffin top? Oh my gosh, like, what are people thinking? It's like, this is what I have to offer to you. This is what I'm showing you. I hope you enjoy it. And I can really, I enter flow a lot more. So I enter that state of creative flow so much easier because I don't have this self-dialogue. I don't have this self-critic in the back of my head telling me I'm not worthy and I'm too big to be up there. Who do I think I am getting up there with, you know, hardly any clothes on and in front of all those people and being the size that I am? So that dialogue has disappeared. And that can be, so that can be used for more constructive things. So that can help me in my flow and help me decide what move I'm going to do rather than tell me that I'm an imposter and that I shouldn't be there.
Yeah, and also the weight you've lost. I mean, even from your highest weight, as we talked about, I mean, being a mango farmer and a nurse, you're on your feet a lot, long shifts, stressful situations like you mentioned there. Now, you came into this just as COVID was coming into Western Australia here, and we were fortunate in our country, or particularly in our state, that we locked down pretty early and we didn't really have the huge amount of deaths and so forth that a lot of other places had. But it was still a highly stressed situation being locked away from our families. If you've got family in New Zealand, so have I, so we couldn't go and see them. I know a number of people that lost people, they couldn't go to their funerals, all those sorts of things, highly stressful things. So you started a whole new way of eating with this intermittent fasting lifestyle on top of being in the hospital. And thank you for your service through this COVID pandemic, by the way, and to all your colleagues there. We really appreciate what you've done for us. And so where to now, Kerry? What are you doing? You got to try anything different? You're just going to cruise along? What's going to be on the plan?
So I'm cruising along for the moment and just still working through my relationship with food and trying to heal my relationship with complex carbohydrates. And it's something that I have to constantly be vigilant without obsession about, because, you know, I am aware that I could start to go down that rabbit hole of, like, you know, I do enjoy carbohydrates, and so making sure that they're nutritious complex carbohydrates that are serving me well. So working on improving my microbiome, and then, yeah, it's like I don't think of maintenance per se. I think of more a constant work in progress that's just constant tweaking and seeing where I go and what I do. So,
yeah it becomes a flow, doesn't it?
Yeah, so I think I'm in a good spot at the moment. I actually spoke with your university PhD student.
Hilmi, yeah.
And so I'm going to have another conversation with him later. We were talking about healthcare workers and IS, so bringing IS into the healthcare system, because I do the stress test clinics up in Kununurra, where I see people who've had cardiovascular complaints or comorbidities, and I hook them up to a treadmill, and I get them to walk really fast on a treadmill, and to see if they've got any blockages in all their heart vessels. And so this is the perfect opportunity to disseminate knowledge and advice about health and well-being. But it's because IF isn't, the research is catching up now, but because IF has often been thought of as some wacky thing, it becomes very hard to kind of promote it to people. Whereas I think now it's becoming more accessible to everyone, and people in the healthcare industry are looking to it as something that could be very useful. So I'm just going to talk to him about how we go about, because I do often tell people about it, because I do see a lot of obese people through the clinic, and so it's just that heading down that path of how we bring it, how we work it into mainstream healthcare, and how we can best advise people to utilize it.
Yeah, I agree, and a big shout out to Hilmi there and the team doing the work. And thank you for doing that, Hilmi. It's going to be an exciting thing, and we hope more and more doctors and medical people do get on board. But it's a challenge for hospitals. I mean, you've heard me talk about, I was in a private hospital down here in Perth. I won't mention the name of them, but they're a very high-quality hospital. And they brought around this tray of food to me, and I looked at it and straight away, because I'm able to add up mentally very quickly now what carbohydrates and sugar are in food.
Mm.
And I looked at this tray, and straight away I computed 33 or 35 teaspoons of sugar and what they gave me. And then I was thinking, if they do this three times a day, plus snacks, they're giving people wine in a hospital bed here, 100 teaspoons of sugar and carbohydrates. And I thought, well, where's the nutrition gone wrong in our system? Where's the education at our university level?
Yes. And the biggest pushback I've had from anyone, like I never advertised it that much that I was doing IF, only to people who I knew were open to it and interested in it. I do have a few friends who fast, not necessarily intermittent fasting, but they'll do longer fast, which is their thing. But the biggest pushback I had was from my friend who's a dietitian, and so she basically said I was an idiot and that I was crazy and stupid, and you know that, and that's coming from someone who's giving diet advice to diabetic people and sick people. And so it's that real, and I know from my own training in nutrition at university is that is what is preached. It's the triangle, the food pyramid, and it's the three meals a day with snacks. And so it's trying to trying to slowly break down those barriers and move away from that and say, no, actually, we have to. Some people probably can eat that way and never be overweight and it's fine for them. But a lot of us, that's just never going to work for us.
No. So, and there's a lot of forces at play too. And there's a lot of, you know, agendas. There's a lot of people talking, the dietitians, of course they're going to tell you it's rubbish because if everybody started intermittent fasting, then their dietitian's out of business, you know. And it's the same as the food companies. The food companies will get people to talk it down. They'll get scientists to come out on Good Morning America and say, oh, intermittent fasting's terrible for you. Because there's an agenda. It was like smoking. Exactly. I remember for years and years and years, every time somebody said there was something bad about smoking, the tobacco companies would get together and they'd come out with all these big campaigns and sort of rubbish all the science. And now we're seeing a bit of that now, but then we're getting some really good science coming through. And I always say to people, if you want a good paper or a summary of papers, go and look at the December 2019 New England Journal of Medicine, a summary by Dr. Mark Madsen, a fabulous summation about intermittent fasting. I mean, when I read negative stuff about intermittent fasting, obviously my first thought is, what's the agenda behind it? Because I know the benefits of it, and I've literally helped hundreds and hundreds of people with this. So I see it. And that dietitian should take a run over to New Zealand and go to Sarah Cull's clinic there in Auckland, where they're working with type 2 diabetes patients and have reversed hundreds and hundreds of people type 2 diabetes by putting them through intermittent fasting rather than sending them down to the surgery to get weight loss surgery. So, you know, there's a lot of evidence for intermittent fasting and we're slowly gathering it. And I think it is becoming more in the mind. I wouldn't say it's mainstream, but it's certainly not a shock now when you say to people, I do intermittent fasting. Because a lot of times now, I'll say, yeah, I intermittent fast, and they'll say, oh, what's your window? And you know straight away that they fast, and then they'll say, oh, you know, I do 16 and 8, or I do the 5 and 2. And like you said, everybody's got to find their niche, their fasting protocol.
Yeah.
They've got to work out the food for themselves. So I can sit here and all day and I know what's going to work best for them by complementing that clean fast with a worthy window, high quality, good nutrient dense food, too satisfied, not stuffed. That is the key. And I've seen that in action with so many people that I've helped. And I'm not here to preach to people about what to eat, and I don't when I work with people. I say, listen, you got to eat what works for you. You know, I can't sit here and tell you not to eat something because you have to work that out for yourself, how it makes you feel. And that's the thing, Kiri. We're all individuals, like you alluded to earlier.
Oh, yeah. Yes, definitely. And, you know, I think the anecdotal evidence is catching up and science is catching up. So like you say to someone, oh, yeah, I do IF. And like my parents, for instance, are out visiting at the moment, and they invited some friends over for dinner last night. And they sat down for dinner and I filled up my soda water and I sat down and I chatted, but I didn't. And the one of the visitors said, oh, you're not joining us for tea. And I said, oh, no, I don't eat dinner. And there was no eyebrow raising or tut-tuts. It was just like, oh, I wish I could do that. And so it was not a negative thing per se. And I just said, well, I'm sure you're very capable if you so wish.
Yeah. And, that is the thing, isn't it? And, you know, like people.
Five years ago, there would have been eyebrows raised and tut-tut and, oh, my gosh, like, you know. So I think we are moving forward.
Oh, I always say critics and naysayers are our secret admirers, because I know that most of the people that were the most critical in my close circle of friends and colleagues and so forth, well, they're all intermittent fasters now, funny enough. Because the qualification for them was the fact that not only did I lose the weight, but I kept the weight off. So a lot of people will sit back and they'll see you lose weight, they'll see you look healthy, and they'll think to themselves, he's going to revert. He's going to go back to being a sugar and fast food addict. He's going to put all the weight back on. This intermittent fasting is non-sustainable. And then when they see it is sustainable, they say to themselves, well, there's something working there because, you know, he looks pretty good. So then they come and ask me, and I say, okay, let's get going. And I put them through a program, and we've had some great success working with people. But, Kerry, if you're sitting up there in a cafe in Kununurra with all your great mates and your nursing friends and mango farmers, and they all said, hey, how do you get going with this, Kerry? What sort of advice would you give them?
I would definitely preach the clean fast. I would say clean fast. Do at least 16-8 and then just see what happens and work out your routine, what you want to do, but give it at least 6 to 12 months. Just think of it as a way of life. It's not a quick fix. And, you know, in a society of instant gratification and quick fixes, like I say, if you want to do it, commit to at least 6 to 12 months and just keep trying. Just keep persevering.
Yep.
That's it, 6 to 8.
Great advice. Clean fast, start slowly, stay in your comfort zone. Eat what makes you feel your greatest. Work towards that. Give yourself grace if things don't go quite to plan. You can always get back on plan easy enough. No 2 days are ever the same. We always have different influences in our life, but I think that's really great advice. But I can't tell you how inspiring you've been on the podcast today, Kerry. And I know, as I said, you're a very inspiring member of our group, and I thank you for that. But thank you for joining me here on the Fasting Highway.
Oh, it's been a pleasure, and thank you very much for having me come chat, Graham. It was wonderful. And again, thank you for being such a strong advocate of IF in the wider community and in the Fasting Highway.
No worries at all, and thank you. Okay, cheers, everybody. Bye.
Oh, thank you so much, Kerry. What an amazing journey you've had so far, and a very inspirational one. And thank you for sharing your story with us today here on the Fasting Highway, and look forward to catching up with you in 6 to 12 months to see where you are then. As mentioned, folks, also there in the podcast, if you are looking for some extra help and accountability and you don't like Facebook so much or Instagram to share your thoughts and look for some answers, you can come and have a private chat with me and get a coaching and mentoring session and help you get on your journey. And you can do that by going to www.thefastinghighway.com. The details are there. Also, details about how to access this podcast if you don't know already, and also where to find my book, The Fasting Highway. So just go to the website, www.thefastinghighway.com, and everything is there. Okay, folks, until next week, be well, be safe, and remember, clean fasting is everlasting.